Welcome to Season 3 of Instant Coffee. I'm Nadine Al-Manasfi.
And I'm Sima Shihab.
And this latest season is an exploration of technology and its developments in the region.
Beyond the emergence of ChatGPT and Sophia the Robot, we wanted to speak with people who are applying, adapting, and reimagining technology in their fields.
We will be exposed to medieval Islamic hospitals, failed Gulf techno cities,
emerging Iraqi fintech startups, inclusive artificial intelligence, and much more.
In this episode, Sima speaks to Lebanese visual artist Nadeem Shoufi about technology's impact on art meaning and art making in the region. Nadeem's own work is heavily reliant on technology, both in format and content. He describes his work as concerned with material histories and futures of innovation and desire. Don't worry, we'll find out more about what that means during the conversation. But what drew us to his work was its futuristic, dystopic atmosphere and the interdisciplinary use of artistic mediums that are both aesthetically pleasing and methodologically interesting. Nadeem is currently a 2024 resident at the Jan van Eyck Academy in the Netherlands, a post-academic institute for research and production in the fields of fine art, design, and art theory. Previously, he has also been co-programs director at the Beirut Art Center.
Hi, Nadeem. Thank you for joining us on today's episode. We're very excited to have you on, and I'm very excited to talk to you about your own work and its relationship to technology, as well as the broader art world in the Middle East in the digital age. We'll get into discussing some of your specific pieces soon, but can you start by telling us a bit more about the themes of your work? What exactly are you interested in thinking about, and what does your work look at specifically?
I mean, I guess to talk about my work, I'm largely interested in what is considered progress. That's usually related to innovation, which is in a big part technology, right? Most of my art is about relationships that have to do with progress and technology, but really like what are the relationships behind these systems? I am interested in trying to show this system from a different way, with different, maybe unexpected relationships that come out of it. Trying to put maybe not myself, but a user in there as a form of audience experience to the work itself.
Thank you for that, Nadeem. Can you give us an example from your portfolio that demonstrates this unveiling of systems and meanings?
I have a work which is about chat rooms, early chat rooms in the Arab world, you know, where people would ask like age, sex, location, where are you from? And these are kind of like what I also grew up on. And I had gotten a hold of an archive of one of these chat rooms by a researcher. There was this like immense desire on these chat rooms to constantly role play, even if it was not in a romantic or sexual way. It was just a constant form of changing identities and role playing. So I decided to preserve the archive in this video, but then use a very robotic voice to show maybe how current technology, text-to-speech technology, cannot even understand the different tones and registers in the Arabic language that people were using. Like very beautiful play on words, very beautiful shifts in identity, you know? So yeah, in that way, I wanted to show how maybe language itself is a technology that people are pushing day by day, that technology of language actually can't keep up with that.
So you have a really broad range of output. Which piece do you think really encompasses this wide range of themes and formats you embody in your work and would give the listeners a good sense of who you are as an artist?
I'm thinking of which one I should talk about. And I mean, maybe I can start with The View from Above takes my breath away fully, just because it's a bit fresher in my head as well. It's kind of like the third project in a series where I think of examples of environmental futures in the Middle East. I decided after two projects of looking at environmental futures to look at like an environmental history of the Middle East. And it started with this landmark program that UNESCO started, which was kind of its first global environmental project, that's for sure, called the Arid Land Program, which was, they had a claim in the 1950s that all of the Middle East was going to become a desert, so we have to green it up, you know? I quickly was drawn to how they visualized it. It almost seemed like the Middle East was like a theme park. the way they would kind of, you know, just like put grass everywhere in like any image about like kind of greening all the deserts. And it was so unrealistic that it was like comical But these things were taken very seriously. To me, I was like, okay, this is kind of very interesting to think of, like, what catches your attention in forms of playground and entertainment, especially ones that like teach you about morals. And so I kind of directly went to like also looking at Disney theme parks. And that's kind of where this project really started, which was when I was researching a Disney amusement park in Florida that was actually a master plan to become an ideal society, like a complete city that ended up just becoming a theme park. And I felt like that arc where it was supposed to like give so much life and then became this thing where you can only occupy during the day and probably as a worker or as a visitor and then leave at night, was very telling of how the Middle East functioned within this massive project to green it so that it can actually extract its resources. Because the whole point was the whole world is now at the risk of hunger after World War II. And we want to focus on the Middle East as a place to green it for the whole world to survive. That's kind of where the project kind of started. And I went through this kind of like visual arc of what technologies were being used to show life or life enhanced by progress, by Disney, by UNESCO, by nations in the Middle East that were part of this. Because you also have to remember that, like, you know, nation building at that time in the 50s was a major component of reshaping the Middle East and national projects and national ambitions. You know, one thread that really captured me was the use of light as a way to show technology. And this is like still persists, you know, every iPhone advertisement now is like an iPhone flickering in darkness, you know, light as this like bearer of progress and life and heaven was heavily used in this project to show that it will become a greener, brighter future. So the whole lecture is really about telling these different narratives and then micro stories within certain nations of how progress was enacted, but really also following an arc of light shows that were happening, whether they were in Disney or in advertisements or in text. And it kind of ends in a today's world about how the same notion of advancing the environment, not to really have any environmental completeness, but to make it more efficient for consumption, is still being thought of today, just with like shinier renders. Actually, in the lecture, I use an advertisement of Neom, where it's this young girl, I think she's about like teen age, sitting down. She sees this kind of light radiating from a sphere, and it's like beautifully rendered. And, you know, she runs towards this light and dives headfirst, and suddenly she's transported to Neom, and she's flying through it. In my lecture, that really reminded me of Ariel, the Little Mermaid, where she's underwater and she's singing, she wants to be part of the world. And then actually, when she looks up, it's light just shining through the sea. Like there's no definition of what life is like in this world, but mainly just that light is this hope. And I kind of link this story of maybe this teen who was in this advertisement to, I don't know what her life will be like, but you know, one life is Ariel, where there's the risk of becoming voiceless by entering technology so quickly or entering progress so like head on without knowing what's actually in store. That whole ad for Neom to me was, I think I've watched it like 60 times, you know, even the way she floats around Neom is how Aladdin and Jasmine go on their magic carpet in the Disney movie, Aladdin. And I also link that with the bird's eye view of looking at progress from this bird's eye view, but actually what does it mean to be a person in this whole scheme, in this nation building? Do you get the same luxuries of beauty when you're down there, or does it just look pretty from the top? Yeah, so these are kind of the kind of negotiations I do or relationships I develop with images in the lectures and where that goes.
Thanks a lot for that, Nadim. That's very interesting. And I have so many questions I want to ask you. What drew us to your work was this unique style and format, particularly through the use of film and lecture. Can you elaborate more on your preferred formats? What do they bring to the subject matter?
I mean, so mainly I work in film, sculpture, and lectures, lecture performances. They each do something very different. For me, the films show how does it feel to live with this type of progress that I'm looking at, whatever the subject is. There's an emphasis on feeling or imagining what it would feel to live through such events. And then the sculptures kind of take on this abstracted encounters. I don't really have specific goals for them. I mean, when I'm making them, I'm like, oh, I want this to feel a bit weird or a bit off, or I want the system to be clunky. But really, I don't have a pinpointed expression of how it will interact with the audience. In sculpture, for example, like I am really drawn to new material, like synthetic material, like silicone or plastic, which we don't really consider now a technology. I mean, plastic is all around us, but it is a form of technology that's constantly evolving. I use these new materials, or I mean, synthetic materials, especially with sculpture and how I think of sculpture as a bodily interaction with an object. The scale, when you blow these proportions up or make them so small, you can make plastic become this intimate friend of yours instead of maybe an enemy, to kind of go beyond the dichotomy of, is this material good or bad? And to kind of create nuances with what technology has built around us. And then the lecture performances come in to show how did I reach these stages within the films and sculptures? What type of research did I do to think of these artworks? And I mean, the lecture performance is by itself an art form. You have the freedom to negotiate your relationship with the research that you are conducting, right? While in maybe other disciplines, research will have a very standard methodology that you have to kind of go through. And I know it's kind of like opening up more and more in different disciplines, but you can also think of research as a technological tool. You know, for example, in like still life paintings, practicing the shadow is a form of research of how things can exist in the space. And now we think of research as like, no, this thing where I have to kind of gather information. And that has to do with what technologies we engage with, you know, especially in like the surplus of information we have today. Maybe drawing a shadow isn't enough at this point. You have to show if the shadow was real or not, or play with whether it was real or not. And I think my lecture performances take on this space where I show my research, but for me, what's more important is I kind of show my relationship to the research, how I negotiate it. A lot of it happens associatively. I work visually. My research is done very image-based or video-based. I consume a lot of content, and that's kind of how technology plays a big role in it. The fact that I have access to archives online, that I have access to random content creators, the fact that, you know, if I'm interested in a subject, what's going to show on page one of Google versus page five? Like, that's actually like also a big thing to think of, like what information is presented to you and how much should you dig in and where should you leave things at surface level? These lecture performances kind of are this mix of associations where some things are kept at surface level because I want to interrogate the surface of maybe just an image, while in another image, I want to actually follow the life of someone in it. That's kind of the world that gets created in my lecture performances, these kind of narratives that trail off, die down early, some stay till the end of the lecture, and then some all kind of clash at some point in the lecture.
So it seems that affect plays a significant role in your art. Can you elaborate more on this, particularly looking at how it shapes your lecture performances?
I try to think of what is the affective in the things that I'm looking at when I'm researching, and then see how that can work in my work. So for example, in renders of future cities, spectacle is a major component in luring you into the future. The idea of that this is such a beautiful spectacle. And it works, you know, I mean, like we are suckers for shiny new things. I then try to think of what would that mean if I, instead of creating a spectacle for the future, try to use that for a present moment. And for example, you know, that translates in one of my films to a person running towards the sun, where you just see the sun blobbing up and down and this like exasperated breath, like running towards this spectacle of light. To kind of create a small emotion in the viewer, maybe not to say it so clearly as how I'm saying it now, but really create a feeling about, okay, what does it mean to chase something, you know, whether it's a sun or another thing or another form of progress, really. I think it plays a big, big role. I think the things I build and the films I make are not really about concise analysis of what I look at or what I'm living. They are more of experiences. And that's for me is really important because I think of the affective as something that is political. You know, there's like, for example, why are we disgusted from waste? You know, because in our culture, waste is supposed to disappear the second you discard it. You know, it goes into your toilet, it goes into your trash, and it goes away. How you deal with waste, maybe also you have to deal with how you deal with disgust. And if you're going to live in the future is going to be full of waste, you have to also negotiate feelings of disgust. That's one example. And I think my films and works try to think of these feelings as social and political results and maybe push them in different directions.
Can you share some pieces or artists whose work you find exciting that also explore the intersection of art and technology?
There's a work by Monica Abbasbous and Sherbel Al-Khoury. It's about a group of gamers that were playing PUBG during the Lebanese Revolution. And somehow their gaming group / WhatsApp group became like a news verification space for them. Kind of seeing what was true, what was not, what was happening. And this kind of like group sharing. And that for me is a really interesting work on so many levels. Because the visuals are striking. It's this group of friends that are playing this game that is about shooting each other. It's a first person game of killing each other, I guess. But then they overlay it with like how they were working together on this WhatsApp group and the type of language they were using with each other, how they were supporting each other. And it's kind of just fascinating to see their digital performance on this game as a form of also like stress release in some way from what's happening on the ground. But then you think like, wow, but this game is also inherently in a way violent. It kind of just gives you a lot of complexities to think about what does actually going offline or online mean? You know, what does it mean taking a break from the real world, going on the digital world, or taking a break from the digital world, but going on the real world? And people that work with film in a very traditional way, but then kind of create new ways of looking at an edit or a narrative are people that are dealing with technology, you know, in a very interesting way. You know, I think of, for example, I mean, this is a well-known work, but Rania Stefan, The Three Disappearances of Saad Husni, where she uses archives of Egyptian films to kind of retrace the life of Saad Husni. The editing in that is amazing. Of how you can reconstruct a life from basically someone who gave their life to the screen, to cinema.
I'd like to ask you more about your understanding of the art world at the moment, and specifically in the Middle East. How do you think technology has changed the way we think of art meaning and art making?
The current way of thinking of technology, which is that it is synonymous with digital culture and digital infrastructure, that to me is kind of really interesting because, I mean, now we have, I want to say like 2 to 3 generations that grew up digitally. I think that has had a lot of influence over how art is being produced in today's world, especially in the region. The reality is a lot of artists don't have studios. It's a very different world than, you know, previous times. But they have their phones and they have their cameras on their phones. So you see this like big jump in video art and a very specific language where they kind of show their own economy of attention and economy of distraction to politics and things that are happening around them. You know, now that you're asking me this question, I'm thinking back and really, you know, the artists that don't show in galleries and institutions, the artists that post online on Instagram, you know, and really depict things that are happening within their country, their region, social activism. A lot of them are digital illustrators, for example. They don't operate in this art world that is exhibitions and institution-based, but they form a huge part of culture today in the Middle East and how information is spread around.
And just going off of that, how has technology changed since you were growing up consuming media and thinking about being an artist?
I grew up on Tumblr, like the social media platform that is called Tumblr, right? And I mean, to me, this is like, super interesting because Tumblr was not really about show us what you look like, but like show us what aesthetics resemble you. It was kind of like, don't tell us who you are, tell us what your vibe is. You know, thinking of this now with Instagram now as the main medium, where it is like, no, please show us your face. Like, we need to see your face. And thinking of this also with the rise of identity politics, artists from maybe an earlier generation were more interested in maybe what vibe was on Tumblr, which is like a set of relations outside of yourself. But now today it's like actually a set of relations that will show your identity. So I see a lot of artists, younger generation artists, making work about, instead of the construction of the world, it's the construction of the world through their like very specific body and space, which is super interesting. And it kind of creates super localized narratives, you know? I think younger artists are inherently like done with anything of like a global culture. Artists online, let's say meme accounts, they are kind of breaking, and they are artists actually. A lot of meme accounts in the Arab region are from artists and by artists, whether they're like not saying their name or not, but they are, or even if they don't consider themselves artists, I think of them as really good artists. You know, they are kind of thinking beyond what does identity politics like hold for me? Because the way they cannibalize content outside of just their body and their identity. And, you know, if we think of like Arab meme accounts, you have these super niche like Iraqi, Lebanese, Saudi. And then you have like the kind of neutral ones that kind of just cannibalize everything. I think this has influenced a lot of artists. At the heart of like everything I do, I think of negotiating what does it mean to live with meaning, put on you or put against you, or meaning you can live with. And progress is a big part of that, right? And these kind of small things I do and the things I look at, they do show that there are spaces for me to kind of dictate how I want to interact with them. That there are also different ways of connecting things and with other people, and how you connect with other people beyond the normalized kind of communication paths, let's say like accepted forms of thinking, because that's kind of what art can really give you, especially art that deals with new technology. It really kind of considers like, wait, what is the thought process behind this? And why is it this way? Why is VR immersive, but not like reading a book? I mean, if it's a good book, it's just as immersive. Is VR immersive because it pushes you into a world and like kind of shuts off all the other senses? That doesn't really sound immersive. That sounds a bit forced. You know, like these are kind of what artists are thinking of now with new technology, because it really emphasizes that you have to think of what meanings come out of it. You know, what does immersive mean in that kind of position?
I think that's all we have time for today, but thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us. We really enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoyed it just as much as we did.
Thank you for listening to Instant Coffee, a podcast brought to you by the LSE Middle East Center. Join us every other Tuesday for a new episode. To learn more about Nadeem's work, follow the links in the podcast description. And don't forget to follow us on your favorite streaming platforms.